Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Benchmark's taking a break over the American Thanksgiving holiday week. For those who missed it, we're rebroadcasting one of the more encouraging episodes from this year. It's the story of a refugee's journey from a Balkans concentration camp in the 1990s to become a pillar of the business community in Red State America. We hope you enjoy it. America's post-industrial Rust Belt is a landscape where you'd think Donald Trump's anti-immigrant message struck a chord. But all isn't as it seems. Even in Missouri, a state that went overwhelmingly for the president in November. We're talking about St. Louis, and where a wave of immigrants from Bosnia, many of them Muslim, have helped revitalize this economy. And it's not just St. Louis. The same thing's going on in once mighty manufacturing powerhouses such as Detroit, Cleveland, and even Lowell, Massachusetts. This week on Benchmark, we examine how the global economy came to Middle America and Middle America never looked back. I'm Daniel Moss, Executive Editor for Global Economics in New York. My co-host this week is Michelle Jamrisco, an economics reporter for Bloomberg in Washington. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Michelle, this episode is based on reporting you and our colleague Eric Englert did from St. Louis last month. Now, you found a few surprises when you went into the heartland. What's the genesis of the story and what surprised you the most?
Well, you introduced it quite well on the political framework. I mean, you would think that in a red state, a very red state like Missouri, that the big city, St. Louis, would be a little pro-Trump as well, at least. But really, this immigration issue did not strike a chord at all with the city. We found in St. Louis, people across all industries of advocacy, nonprofit, business, people on the street, they were not only appreciative of the immigrant community and refugees, but they really clung to that community as a source of economic livelihood. I mean, this is an area that is in the heart of the Rust Belt, has a very, excruciating transition to services economy as much of the country. And they just really did appreciate this immigrant community.
And just so we're clear, when we talk about a deep red state, we're talking about the presidential level.
Mm-hmm.
Claire McCaskill was reelected in 2012. Roy Blunt had at one point what looked like a competitive race, and the governor contests there are sometimes competitive. We're talking about red at a presidential level.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And now, Michelle, we'll get to a special guest in just a second, but did this trip also help highlight some of the nuances in this sort of, north-south, red-blue divide? I mean, it feels from the reporting you've done and what our guest is about to say, that it's no longer simply red state, blue state. That's like so 90s. That's so class of 94-ish. Really, it's urban, rural, and it's almost not even that. It's in transition to urban, suburban divides.
Yes, it's definitely urban rural or urban suburban, and it's also national security versus economic, which we'll, I'm sure we'll get to as well. But in the urban versus suburban and rural, I mean, in St. Louis, you see really the heart of the city going pretty overwhelmingly for Clinton, but you know the surrounding counties going very much, you know, in excess of 60% and 70% for Trump, and much of the rest of the state going for Trump as well. So really a divide, and much of that played out in this issue on their feelings on immigration.
And we have a special guest on the line, one of the business owners from St. Louis who came from Bosnia, who was featured in the story. Sidik Kukic, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Now, you are the owner of a business called the Taft Street Bar. Tell us a bit about that.
I opened this place in 2003, and I've been open ever since. Before that, I have a small restaurant, small seafood restaurant, also in St. Louis City area. And I came in 1993 as a refugee here in St. Louis.
And Sadiq, tell us a little bit about your arrival in St. Louis and your first impressions of the city. Maybe not many people know that refugees don't exactly have a you know, high choice of where they're placed by the State Department. So what did you think of St. Louis when you were told that that's where you would arrive? And what were your first impressions when you got here?
Well, I didn't know exactly where I'm going in the beginning when I applied to come in the United States. Mm-hmm. I was coming from Belgrade. And also I was in two concentration camps in hold by Serbians, Serbs. So we apply, me and my brother, we apply for the city on the river because we used to work on boats. Anyway, so we ended up in St. Louis right after flood. Came here with not much money. I didn't speak any English. And I have a 100 German marks, which was equal $58 back then. So we came to International Institute, and that was it. And we work our way up. I start working as a prep cook in one small Mexican restaurant. Of course, I didn't speak any English, and all recipes were in Spanish. So welcome to United States.
You know, Sadiq, it sounds like a classic immigrant story. I mean, I'm one myself, but I certainly wasn't a refugee, and I certainly did not spend time in a concentration camp. Did your experiences prior to leaving Bosnia, did that infuse you with a overwhelming drive to make it in the United States, despite arriving with just a few German marks in the pocket? And it's interesting to hear you say marks. I'm used to hearing euros, but it's a sign of the times that were then. Tell us about what went through your mind when you found out you were going to St. Louis, and did you have any sense of how you were going to make it and become the pillar of the community that you now are?
Well, back then, you know, you are looking to save your life, and I was for about 10 months in Belgrade, and the country was, they said, no in a war, but they have a lot of police on the street, and you know, sometime I will get stopped when I went to buy a bread, and sometime I will get arrested because they have questions for me. But you know, when I finally get into program to come in United States, I didn't think that it will happen, to be honest with you, because it was very hard before war to get into United States, and I never thought that I will be one of the people who will be living in United States. And you know, what we know about United States back from the movies, we know about life of the Hollywood and big cities. And we didn't know anything about crime and poverty and, you know, that some people experience here in the United States. And, you know, not everybody living in the wealth that we thought that's what is all about America. But when we come here, I ended up in south side of St. Louis City, where was diversity. You have all kinds of people, Arabics, and I was one of the first Bosnians who came, no, first, but first dozen families that came as a refugee here. So, you know, we didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody or anything about where I am and how to get anywhere. So, you know, later on we start coming in international institute, start learning English and way to behave in United States, because here is different than anywhere else that I've been.
And tell us about the business that you started. How did you get the money to start a business and then expand it?
Well, I was on beginning, I was studying as a prep cook and working my way up. And 4 years later, I became executive chef at Missouri Botanical Garden. And money was much better, but still I didn't think that I will have money to open up. And I started going on restaurant auctions, buying used stuff, chairs, tables, and things like that, and storing that in a couple garages that I rented from the friends who work with me. And then when company that I work for didn't negotiate the contract, I was out of work, and I was start looking for the place. Went in one place, and woman that I tried to rent it from, she was really unreasonable, and I didn't sign the contract. So I went on lunch with friend, and I talked to the owner, and he said, "Well, I'm moving next door." I said, "Who's going to be here?" He said, "Well, I don't know." So I asked him for the name of the property owner. He didn't give me that. I find out, and I talk to the guy, and I signed the lease same day and start working on rehabbing the property because it was in very bad shape. Money. I borrowed some money from my family, and I put some money on my credit cards, which was really bad idea. But when I opened my first restaurant, I have $350 on my account, and I have 2 car payments and house payment as well. But $350, it was all my capital in the world, and I was behind like over 33,000 in a debt with family, which, you know, with bank you can make a payment, small payment, but you know, when you meet your family, you have to look them in the eyes. So, you know, you owe them the money, so you have to really work something out.
The Bloomberg Sustainable Business Summit returns to London on April 25th for a solutions-driven look at the sustainable business and finance landscape, looking at the latest trends in ESG regulations, supply chain innovation and transition finance. Speakers include leaders from CDP, Emirates Environment Group, Seedtrace, COA and more. Summit advisors include City Commercial Bank, Red Sea Global and Schneider Electric. Visit bloomberglive.com/SBS2024 to learn more.
Okay, so fast forward, Sadiq, from that fairly tough start to where you are now. You're a pillar of the St. Louis community. I understand you're the head of the Bosnian Chamber of Commerce. Just briefly describe the trajectory there.
Well, as I said, I opened that place in August of 2000. And I wasn't involved in community work or anything like that. But, you know, I was pretty decent work, and my business was pretty decent. I started growing, and I bought property where I am now with Taft Restaurant. And I was trying to open a catering kitchen because my kitchen became too small for what I was doing. Anyway, I became sick, and things did not go as well as I thought. So CD told me that I cannot open the catering kitchen. I have to open a restaurant and put the building in a shape where it was in beginning of 20th century. So I did that, and I couldn't handle two restaurants. I sold the restaurant on Grand. I opened one on Greyway St. Taft. And then I start slowly but approaching to the community work where we start Bosnian Chamber of Commerce. And I was just a member back then, and, you know, very soon we start getting idea about applying for the grant that we will later on get that grant and buy the building where we are now at 5039 Greyways.
Okay, and describe the contribution that the Bosnian community is making to the economic life of St. Louis. How many members do you have in the Bosnian Chamber of Commerce? How many residents of St. Louis are of Bosnian descent? And how does the city feel about you?
Well, there is about 43 Bosnian businesses as a member of Bosnian Chamber, and we have many American businesses who wants to make connections with Bosnians as workers and as businesses. Bosnian people did a lot of good things in the city of St. Louis and later on in the county, because our first stop was city. So we still have a good amount of people in the city, but a majority now is in St. Louis County, mostly South County. And they are still involved in a lot of different things. They actually wants to make their neighborhood, either city or county, better place for their children, for community, for everything.
That's one thing I wanted to get at too, Sadiq, is that, you know, the neighborhood that you and your Bosnian other Bosnian refugees settled in is Bivo neighborhood, right, in the city. And that was a place that a lot of people said was not so pleasant a place before, but once you all came in and had this kind of rehabilitative attitude, opened more businesses, more so than native-born St. Louisans, and really kind of got your hands dirty in the community, it turned around a bit. Can you tell us about that? I mean, what was your sense of the community beforehand?
I was a tenant in the place, second floor of my restaurant, back then in 1994. I moved in, and this was a horrible neighborhood.
Mm.
And in 1996, there was a big wave of the Bosnians coming from Germany and from Bosnia. So we start settle up right here in a Bivo neighborhood. We start buying property, fixing them up, and it was really blooming. And then I will say in 2002, 2003, they start moving out in a county. But there is still a lot of Bosnians in the Bivo neighborhood. And there is many neighborhood organizations, as well as Bosnian Chamber of Commerce and Better Bivo Now, that we are working together. Lately, we form a SID, which is Community Improving District, mm-hmm. that is operating from 4457 Greyways to Christie Avenue. There is 127 property owners that we want to raise ourselves taxes so we can pay for security, beautification, cleaning, and things like that.
Now, Sadiq, Missouri is a state that went heavily for Donald Trump last November. At various parts of the campaign preceding the election, issues of race and immigration were toward the forefront of our national narrative. What was going through your mind last year and last November?
Well, you know, I hope I will not get misunderstood. There is a hate and mistreating and things like that, but a lot of people forget, not just in Missouri, in the United States of America, where is their heritage coming from? Maybe they were not refugee, but they are immigrants like you are. And color of the skin or heavily accent like mine is doesn't mean anything. People try to hurt you. Maybe they don't even think why. Fortunately, here in the city of St. Louis, picture is not bad. Picture is pretty good, and neighbors try to stick together, and most of them appreciate what we did here in the past years.
Having said all of that, is there a country you would have rather been resettled in?
No. I didn't know anything about United States, and United States definitely look different now in 1993 when I come here. But if I have to choose, people don't understand what we have here. This is best country in the world.
What is it you think we have here?
Diversity, and we have most of the people in the United States, they are really good, really nice people. And you have a bad apples in every basket, people who just, either they are not educated or they saw something on TV that some terrorist did, and all people are not safe. People from from Muslim community, they are not all terrorists, and they are not all bad. You know, terrorist is terrorist. I don't want to have anything with them, but I am born and raised as a Muslim. You know, craziness, people who do something, I don't know what they're doing. I don't socialize with them. I don't know any of them. Some people put in the same sack, all of us.
So are you optimistic about immigrants and refugees in America in the future?
I am. I have a meeting in the mayor's office a few days ago where people from few cities from the Greece came over here and tried to bring some refugees from Greece to the St. Louis. So I don't know how it will work, but hopefully they will get through.
Well, Sadiq, we're humbled by your story. There's a lot more that we could say in this conversation, but the show must go on. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you know, Michelle, I read the story that you and Eric wrote with some interest, and not just because I'm your boss, but it seemed counterintuitive. But wow, I did not know that Sadiq had spent time in concentration camps, plural. One would be bad enough.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's so much detail. This issue is so complicated on a national level, even on state level. Once you get down to the city and once you get down to stories like Sadiq's, it is a lot more interesting to dig into the detail and see, the color behind each anecdote that contributes to this.
I was also very interested and, frankly, touched, without hesitation. Knowing what he knows now, he would never have picked any other country. And he said, people don't understand what we have here. What did you think about that?
I was fascinated. It actually brought to mind another family we explored in the fall, a Syrian refugee family in Phoenix that said much the same. I mean, they said, you know, things that the opposition would just love to hear. You know, I'm so American. I feel American. I feel like I'm a part of this economy. I want to give back. I want to contribute. And that's much of what we heard from Sadiq as well. He's, you know, as you called him, a pillar in the community. He's leading a chamber of commerce. He's, you know, very pro-business. He's trying to reduce crime and, you know, reduce the blight in the community. So it's very much a part of the sort of American dream, American spirit that they've got. And yeah, as you said, without hesitation, he says, no, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
And you're going to keep reporting on the role of immigrant communities and the economies mm-hmm. of the cities in which they're located.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stories to tell. I mean, we've tackled a little bit of the Rust Belt, especially with this story. Like I said, we went to Phoenix last fall. There's a ton of places, fascinating things going on across the country, especially when you get into the local levels of, you know, politics that might be playing out in unusual ways, but also the economic story being a truly fascinating one. We originally got into this in part because, you know, President Trump says he wants to grow the economy 3 or 3.5% at least, sometimes upwards of that figure. And economists are saying you can't do that unless you at least keep immigration stable. And yet that's not part of his message either. So at least in the short term, we're going to have some hurdles here. And we're looking at, you know, how this affects people on a local level, how it affects them on a state level, and then eventually how it's going to affect the national economy.
Well, we'll get you back on next time you publish one of those stories.
Appreciate it.
Benchmark will be back next week, and until then, you can find us in so many places, very, very many places. The Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, our Bloomberg app, as well as iTunes, Pocket Cast, and Stitcher. While you're there, take a minute, rate and review the show so more listeners can find us. And let us know what you thought of the show. You can follow me at Moss_Eco, and Michelle, you are at...
at ML Jamrisco, MLJAMRISKO.
Benchmark is produced by Sarah Patterson. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Do you love Elon Musk? Do you hate Elon Musk? Do you have no idea what to think about Elon Musk? Then we have just the show for you.
He's become even more larger than life.
Buying Twitter doesn't get us closer to Mars.
They are like really close to the edge of like everything falling apart.
Like, oh, Elon, I volunteer, put a chip in my brain.
Each week on this podcast, we'll break down, analyze, and debate the most important stories on Musk and his empire.
It's all one big universe. You just work for Elon Inc.
From Bloomberg Businessweek, this is Elon Inc. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.